Yeah, I know I did, but you can't. I might just delete that. You're gonna use that in the intro for the next. Don't use that in the intro. I swear to
Welcome to Nil. My name's Quentin Irie.
And I'm James King.
And this is the show for those of us starting from scratch and trying not to screw things up too badly as we do. Every episode, one of us brings a topic from our lives that the other has not heard, and we explore that thought and many, many tangents along the way.
Last week, we had singer-songwriter Julia Hatfield as our very first guest star on the show. This week, we're back to our normal format. Just you and me, Q.
Oh boy, back to the boredom.
Back to the boredom. We apologize. We'll work on getting another guest very soon. even if one of us has to change our voice and pretend to be someone different.
Now that has to happen.
That's right. That's right. Now we have to do that. So you'll never know. You'll never see it coming. look for the name that sounds made up. So
yeah, that'll be your exactly. clue.
I think we're doing filler words again this week since we're kind of back in the swing of things. I don't think it really would have been fair to do that last week. I'm failing at it so hard, but luckily we haven't started yet. So we'll start here in just a minute since we're still in the intro. It's off limits. Let's see. What else? Yeah, I know we haven't started yet.
I'll throw in that I have. Well, see, now I'm doing it. It's because you freaking.
Aren't you glad we haven't started?
Yeah, you started the trend and now I'm struggling to break out of it. You jerk. Anyway. I recently recorded an episode of Franchise Fatigue that I think I've mentioned once or twice before. We talked about Thor Ragnarok, and it was a pretty lively conversation.
What the hell did you do to my beloved Thor?
I definitely recommend checking it out. It should be out by the time this is out because they are a weekly show, and though you wouldn't know it, by the way, James was just talking, we are indeed a monthly show, not a weekly show, so... Go ahead and check that out. The link will be in the description. Check out Franchise Fatigue, especially the Ragnarok episode, if you want to hear my thoughts on it.
That was just a live look into our future when we have enough donations to become a weekly show. Ragnarok is surprisingly controversial, I feel like. It's just very, very divided. Some people were just absolutely, just completely offended by the fact that a superhero, you know, superhero could be funny, I guess. Like, Thor's supposed to be dark or whatever. I thought it was great. I mean, I thought it was a cool departure from the norm. But anyway, yeah, that's another conversation for another day. But
I like it a lot. I think the majority of people really liked it. Like, it's pretty resoundingly enjoyed, I think. But there is a vocal minority who were upset with the direction they took the character. But, you know, they're just more fun for the rest of us, I suppose.
Right. That makes for good conversation.
In the realm of movies, films, cinema, as you might say, have you heard of a little film called Parasite, James?
Parasite. I have not heard of that. That sounds like a 90s movie for some reason.
It's a 2019 release. I just saw it, 2 weeks ago? It's a Korean film. Written and directed by Bong Joon-ho. The movie that you might have seen of his was Snowpiercer.
Yes.
Okay, same guy. If I'm not mistaken, and I'm speaking off the top of my head, so forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think Snowpiercer is his only English language film.
False.
It might just be my favorite movie of the year. I don't see anything else really taking that spot from it. It was so incredible. It made me feel things I've never felt before. I mean that in all sincerity. Like, that's not hyperbole.
Favorite movie of the year. That's some high praise. I'll have to check this out.
Do yourself a favor.
What's the synopsis, the brief synopsis?
So I went into it purely because I knew it was getting a lot of buzz and I like Bong Joon-ho. And I think that's the way to see it. Don't watch a trailer. Don't look up a synopsis. Nothing like that. All I'll say is that it's about a poor family in Korea, and it's awesome. Just go in and experience it.
I just got someone looking in the window here at me. I don't know if I'm being too loud. So,
are you in the library?
Once again. No, I'm at the, I'm like the third, well, I am in the library building, but I'm on the third floor. It's like, I'm in like the media viewing room. So I think that is code for I can be as loud as I want, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you're viewing media, presumably... The media makes noise. I mean, I guess you could be looking at paintings or something. Does that count as media?
Yeah. I'm sure you can make an argument for that. I'll just be as loud as I can until I get thrown out here. So
Well, if we if you do get kicked out, don't stop recording, because we'll just turn this into a docu-podcast and follow the whole experience. It'll be entertaining.
Sounds good.
I'm Googling the definition of media right now. One second.
I figured you were doing something like that. Reading a tweet right now. The last thing I expected to do was audibly awe at the end of the first episode of hashtag The Mandalorian. That very well may be the cutest thing I have seen. I can't wait for the next episode.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, so I have no comment.
I feel like from the trailer that does not follow, but there's also a dude that tweeted it. I'm not gonna shout him out. Actually, this will be a test. Austin, if you're listening to this podcast, this is for you, but I don't think you are. When I'm making fun of your tweet.
But we should do a segment where we just make fun of his tweets until you real, and we'll keep doing it until he realizes that it's real.
Someone will probably tell him that listens to it. That's why I'm not going to give his last name. This will be a test to see if you're listening to this our podcast. And he's like, "Oh yeah, yeah, I listen to your podcast." I'm like, "Oh really? What about the roast Austin segment?"
It's perfect. I love this. I love this, and I will. I support its inclusion in the future.
Okay, perfect.
Media is defined as. This is the Wikipedia definition, but that's the extent of the research I'm willing to do right now. The communication outlets are tools used to store and deliver information or data. The term refers to components of the mass media communications industry, such as print media, publishing, the news media, photography, cinema, broadcasting, radio and television, and advertising. So, I mean,
it doesn't explicitly say painting, but I feel like that falls in the spirit of that definition.
I feel like there's a compelling argument to be made for that. Okay, well, now that we've thoroughly satisfied that unnecessary rabbit trail, go ahead, James.
Okay, let's see here. Down to business. So this week, we are back, like I said, to our main format queue. This week, you have The Floor. I had the episode last time talk about Supernatural. I had a guest, so it is back to you. Take us away.
Here we go again. I kinda wanna be more than friends. So take it easy on me. I'm afraid you're never satisfied.
I want to do something a little bit unconventional. I mean, we're not that many episodes in, so it doesn't mean that much. But still, it's different than anything we've done so far.
We're still branding.
Yeah, exactly. I threw out a question last week on all of our social media. I had this thing kind of gnawing in my head from the Supernatural episode. At about like the 28-minute mark of that episode, we talked about power and respect for power and kind of civil disobedience and when it's okay to disobey the law or rules or any of that stuff in general. So you had asked the question, and it was a question that I didn't know I was going to get, obviously, because that's how we do this. But it was something that I realized having been forced to think about it through that podcast that I hadn't really thoroughly addressed my own bias and my own mindset on that. And so it got me started down that trail of thinking, like, I don't think that this philosophy is really fully fleshed out or fully reconciled with itself. So I pushed that out just to see what people would think. And to be totally honest, unless something's happened since the last time I checked, which granted has been a little bit, on most social media, no one cared to help me out whatsoever. They were like, screw you. We're not. We have no feedback.
Figure it out yourself.
Whatsoever. Yeah, exactly. But Old Faithful Reddit did come through. I got some really fantastic answers there, and it really has further fleshed out my philosophy on it. But I want to kind of go on a journey. I don't want to start with where I feel like I'm at now, because James, you have not had the ability to go through this process. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to read the post that I put on Reddit. The link for this, by the way, will be in the show notes. I was able to have a really good conversation with a few people on it. Eventually, the admins took down the post because because I linked to our podcast and they saw that as self-promotional. So I went back and forth with them a couple times and was like, look, I was just trying to like make it easier to see what I actually thought and like what stemmed this idea. I'll take it out if you want. And, you know, I don't need to link to it or anything like that. So I rewrote it and sent it to them and asked them to put it back up that way. And they said that they were okay with me posting that, but I would have to make a whole new post. They wouldn't They wouldn't make my old post alive, basically, or renew my old post. Yeah.
Right. So what's the point of that?
Exactly. I already had this great conversation, and now it's as if it never happened. So that's lame. So the link will still work. You can't comment on it, but you can kind of see the conversation I have, and I'm going to be pulling from that a lot. But what I want to do first is I'll read you what I think pretty well encapsulates my old perspective. And then, James, I want to get your statement, your nutshell statement of how you feel about power. And then I want to go through some of the points that were made, because I got a lot of really good feedback, and just discuss the points that were being made. And then at the end, we'll talk about how this has changed our perspectives, if at all. For me, I already know my perspective has changed. The reason I don't want to dive right in with how my perspective has changed through this is that I have the hunch that working through this with you as well, James, might further change that and enrich it. So I want to go with that final answer first.
That's the mission of the podcast, my friend.
Okay, so part one, my original perspective on power, and this will give James some time to figure out what he's going to say. What I wrote on Reddit was, I put it in the subreddit, Change My View. Great subreddit, by the way. Really enjoy it. Definitely recommend it to any Redditors out there. Change My View. Minor and illogical laws/rules are okay to ignore. I want to get some feedback in episode 5, Media Part 2 Supernatural, at 2830. So there's the exact time code for you. In my podcast, my co-host and I had a conversation about authority. What I said is still true of where I am, but I'm not sure if it should be. I'm looking for counterpoints, rebuttals, or really anything that might change my mind. If you don't want to listen, basically, I think that minor and illogical authority are okay to ignore. An example would be low levels of speeding for a minor law. I probably shouldn't share what I think is illogical in government. Best not to have that on the internet forever. I do stand by that. Instead, think of some of the dumb rules that probably got thrown at you in college. I was one of those people who didn't really give a crap. My major issues with my own opinion are that it feels inconsistent, and I don't think I would be comfortable with most people being the arbiters of what is minor or illogical. Make me wiser. And then I just linked out to the episode. So that's where I started, and I simplified it because I didn't want to spend a ton of time typing out what I meant. I think the only thing that I would expound on in terms of what my initial predilection or opinion was is when it comes to this idea of minor or illogical laws, a lot of what I'm talking about are things that are not necessarily immoral, because I think when it comes to immoral laws, that's an obvious no for me. But for things that are just inconvenient and don't necessarily serve a greater good, like I genuinely think that sometimes speed limits are set way too low. So if there's not a danger to anyone, you know, I'm not speeding through a school zone because that puts someone else in danger. But when the speed limit is set too low, there's no risk to anyone else, and necessarily there's no chance that I'm going to get caught. I don't really care. And that point gets extrapolated into a lot of other things. Like I said, stuff that I probably shouldn't necessarily vocalize, but I think you kind of get the principle at hand and the philosophy itself and the problems that I have with it. So before we dive into what people had to say to me, I'm wondering how you would encapsulate your own philosophy on this issue, James.
Yeah, that's pretty similar. Is this am I on the right thread here? It's got like 28 comments or so.
Let me see.
Are you Fly Like the Eagle?
Yep, that's me.
Okay, are these all responses to you here?
Yep.
Dang, that's a pretty good thread, actually.
Dude, Reddit is the bomb. I'm all about Reddit. 10 out of 10.
That's a good, I don't know what you call it on Reddit, but that's a good header or tag or whatever, too. Because I think that minor and illogical laws, it's like, okay, you know, like a lot of people want to jump in on that because there's a lot of them. So, yeah, no, I think mine's pretty similar. It's kind of what we were talking about. It is very cut and dried, I think, when you come to, you know, immoral versus moral law. I think, too, to an extent, you kind of have that with taxes in terms of, you know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. So, like, even when it's not convenient, you don't like it. I think we still have a biblical responsibility to support lawful government, lawful institution of government. So that is a gray area, though, when you get into kind of those ones that's like, okay, is this actually does this law have a moral component to it, or is it one that is just simply put in place for the safety of others? Like that argument about, you know, would you still have to obey the speed limits if there were, you were the last person on Earth?
Yeah.
I've argued with some people that say yes. I don't see why in the world you would do that, but
yeah, for sure.
I mean, to each their own. So it's kind of one of those things. We'll keep looking in here. This is really weirding me out. So
I'm an audience.
I am exactly. I saw them come in here and get a studio audience going here, get a laugh track. So probably, yeah. When it comes down to it, for me, I think the moral component versus the amoral component to law is kind of the distinguishing characteristic. So is it traffic violation? Is it taxes? Even like our old case, you know, involving criminal intent.
Yeah.
You know, if you file your taxes incorrectly, no one can come up to you and tell you that was morally wrong. If you stab someone in the middle of the street, I think we can all unequivocally say, barring psychopaths, that would probably not see a problem with it, that's you can't do that. So that's one of those things that I think it's pretty easy to decide, but where you're at, I think, and where I'm at, kind of where we're still solidifying, I guess, our beliefs on this, is that kind of gray area where it doesn't necessarily involve a moral component to it. And if it does, who is the ultimate arbiter of that? Is it the courts? Is it the legislature? Should it be the individual? How should we behave in these situations where it's not maybe necessarily spelled out with 100% certainty?
Excellent. Yeah, what I really like, and I wasn't sure 100% where you would be coming from on this, but what I really like is that we're both in a place on this that is very malleable, very open to new perspectives. So it's kind of the perfect subject for, I think, what we're doing on this show of just, you know, educating ourselves and learning more. And I felt a lot stronger after kind of reading through a lot of what's on Reddit. And I think that will be compounded by our conversation here. So I want to start off by just going through what people said and then conversating as we go and seeing where things take us. Rabbit trailing as we do.
As we do.
Let's see. We're probably going to have a lot of fun with these with these names. User Nighthawk37 says, you have two very different things here. One, laws that are exaggerations, like the speed limit. Two, laws that are wrong, aka illogical. In both cases, the laws are wrong, but they differ to what degree they are wrong. By extension, our behavior should also differ in the degree that we resist or disobey them. If a law is wrong, it becomes the duty of lawmakers and the citizens to make a correction to that law. Think Gandhi making salt in the spring of 1930. But we don't always have to be as huge as Gandhi. The speed limit issue is a good example of people not taking things too far. We all acknowledge that speed limits are often too slow, but we don't rally against them, and instead we simply push the limit when we drive. We know that if we change the law, there's a very real possibility that people would drive even faster, and that would be too dangerous. Ignoring laws we don't agree with is something else entirely. Imagine if everyone in a town ignored a law about parking your car on the street overnight. The law would still exist, but no one would follow it, not even the police. Eventually, a point would come where people in charge can choose who to punish and when based on their own personal issues. We can all see where this is bad. You forget to say good morning to the mayor one day, and that night he has your car towed out of spite. It's crazy, but people are crazy. And that's what yes. Nighthawk37 had to say.
Nighthawk37 takes an interesting approach there. I don't know if you... So to me, he kind of takes it from like the enforcement side of things. So it's like kind of handles it on the back end almost, because he's kind of contending that there should be some sort of flexibility. There's almost an inherent good to having a sort of flexibility in the enforcement of law. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily there being an absolute, but when the officer pulls you over, kind of can make a determination on whether or not you were, you know, deliberately breaking this law, if you were in a hurry to class, whatever it is. So he's saying that we need to have those absolute laws, but that there should be a component of malleability or flexibility on the enforcement side is kind of what I think he's inferring in that argument. At least that's what I picked up.
I really like that take. What I had replied to him was extremely helpful. I think the differentiation you make is apt and you broaden the issue beyond my personal experience. My biggest issue with my own philosophy was the societal implications, and I really like how you extrapolated that. Balance in all things is key, and that's what I got here. And that's the thing that I really appreciated, was his balance in saying that if a law is wrong, and that's kind of what we were already discussing, beyond inconvenient, immoral, we have an obligation then to seek out change and resist. And Gandhi is a pretty prime contemporary example of that. And then something like a speed limit, where a law is minor and inconvenient, we don't rally against it. We just push the limit, right? We push it to where we can. And I think that that's something that naturally happens. Like, speed limit in a weird way ended up being kind of perfect example, I think, because whatever the speed limit is, people will go pretty regularly between 5 and 10 over, I think. Like, if you set the speed limit at 60, what you're really saying is it's 70, you know? Right, and so if you raise it then beyond that, like if you say, oh, the speed limits are too slow, we need to raise it. People are driving 70 anyway, make the speed limit 70. Then what you're really doing is raising the speed limit to 80, because people always push the limit.
Well, Eddie, I want you doing 40 miles per hour in a 35-mile zone. Now, subtracting the latter from the former, that would leave you with a violation of about 5 miles per hour, right?
Right, I can't deny that, but we've always had an understanding about it. We need that extra 5 miles an hour to get over Turner's grade.
Uh-huh. Well, I tell you, Eddie, I let you do 40 today, you do 45 tomorrow. I let you do 45 tomorrow, you do 50 the day after that. You do 50 the day after that, you do 55 the day after that. Then if you can do 55...
All right, I get the idea.
That factor I find to be really interesting, and I actually really appreciate the fact that he's coming at it from this... Well, I assume he or she is coming at it from this practical standpoint of what do we do, how do we respond, and what are the greater implications? Because that's the thing that I was struggling with the most, because my philosophy initially was so personalized that it feels hypocritical that I wouldn't be willing to extrapolate that to the rest of humanity.
Sure. Yeah, so he's basically saying if it's a big change, seek maybe reform in the legislature. If it's a smaller change, society kind of on a curve almost will in very small ways revolt against it. Speeding, something that everyone's done, so either inadvertently or on purpose. But as we both know, speeding is a strict liability crime.
According to Cornell Law, quote, strict liability exists when a defendant is liable for committing an action, regardless of what his or her intent or mental state was when committing the action. In criminal law, possession crimes and statutory rape are both examples of strict liability offenses. Unquote.
But that will be one of those things that we'll leave up to enforcement, I guess. If you decide to bend it a little bit, then you hope you can come up with a good explanation for why you decided to do that. That's a very good point, though. I mean, that is, I think, accurate. So I think Nighthawk 37's point is well taken in the sense that we do need that absolute, but we also need flexibility. I think that's where, you know, good law enforcement comes in, that are willing to take in the day-to-day. So
absolutely. And it's almost like there's an unwritten agreement in something like that, where there are certain laws, like, I mean, it's not in my own best interest, for example, no matter how dumb I think certain taxes are, to cheat on my taxes, because that'll ultimately come in and bite me in the butt, right? Like, it's not going to It won't work out for me. It's a dumb thing to do, regardless of what I think about it, because it's not in my own selfish self-interest to do it. However, there are certain things like speeding where I, for example, usually when I'm driving, if I'm setting my cruise, I'm probably setting it about 5 over whatever the speed limit is. And I feel perfectly comfortable doing that because the cops don't care. You know, I even if I'm driving by a police officer, whether they're stationary or I'm passing them, I don't change that. I don't dip back down to whatever the actual speed limit is, because it's such an insignificant amount of speeding that I have never once been pulled over for going that much over. So it's this kind of like unwritten agreement that, yeah, that's insignificant. It's not worth his time to pull me over for something that small. So we're both fine. And I think that's a good barometer to play. Like, what is worth all of our time to care about? Going 5 over, not worth it.
And I think even five is within that margin of error for radar. And then if you have new tires, sometimes your speedometer will be read one or two below what you. So I mean, that's the thing is you can get into that all day. And I think in Texas, it's a good idea. It's a good example of well crafted policy because the technical rule is not the actual speed limit. It's driving dangerous given the condition. So technically, if you want to go protest the ticket, I think you can win that most times if you can show you were driving responsibly and in a controlled manner, even if you're going over the speed limit. So I think that's a good example of showing deference to the system in terms of like, okay, if you want to take the time, you feel like you can go. The thing is, it's probably not even worth the hassle to set up a court date, go to court, show up, represent yourself, make the argument. But that option does exist for you there. I think that's a good example of good policy being crafted by people to show that there should be flexibility and not absolutes on things like speeding.
Absolutely. And I actually really appreciate that. I didn't know that about Texas law, but I think that's really, really good because it then ties over to the other side of it that we've been discussing, the moral application. Because if you're driving dangerously, if you're going dangerously fast, or even if you're under the speed limit, but it's storming out and you can't see a decent distance in front of you, that then crosses, for me, the moral boundary. You are now not only a danger to yourself, but a danger to others. You are causing a moral harm, and it is therefore incumbent on you to drive at a safe speed. And that's the thing that's the critical distinction for me, is that often that safe speed is... what's the word I'm looking for?
I think I know what you're trying to say, but I can't think of the word either.
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to say is that the speed limit is irrelevant to the decision. If it's storming, right, then you're going well below. You know, you might be. I've had plenty of times where I'm going 20 or 30 in an 80 because it's not safe to go any faster. I think that's just an important thing to keep in mind, is that not only are we talking about this on a level of sometimes I want to go faster and there's no reason that I shouldn't be able to, but also sometimes the law isn't safe enough and we have to take it into our own hands to be responsible enough to say it doesn't matter. There's a certain expectation here of responsibility that we need to take as individuals. You want to go to the next one, or do you just have more thoughts on Mr. or Mrs. Nighthawk?
No, I think Nighthawk, their point is well taken.
Beautiful. The next comment up is Cranky Old Hobo. Oh, Cranky Old Hobo. I put the Y in the wrong place. Cranky Old Hobo says, right off the bat, without listening to your podcast, I disagree.
I like how he snuck that diss in there. Like, I'm not gonna take the time to listen to it, but
honestly, most of these people probably didn't. One person gave us props on the podcast and was like, "Hey, good luck with your show and whatnot." I was like, "Hey, man,
not Cranky Old Hobo though." I mean, I don't know.
No, definitely not Cranky Old Hobo. We'll get to that person wherever they are.
Continue.
Right off the bat, without listening to your podcast, I disagree, specifically with, quote, I should be able to ignore low-level speeding laws. A, because this is a genuinely slippery slope, how much should you be able to ignore it? 5 kilometers an hour? 10?
It's kilometer.
As much as you feel you can handle? B, depending on where you're driving, the risk of a fatality doubles by every 5 to 10 kilometers an hour.
Please stop.
You go over the limit. Those laws are there for all of us.
Where is this guy from?
That somewhere that is not America.
I think it's pronounced kilometer, by the way.
What am I saying? Kilometer?
Kilometer. He's saying it like an American.
Well, I'm sorry. I think you're right, though. Kilometer. Fatality doubles every 5 to 10 kilometers. There you go.
Still wrong. You leave me no choice.
Those laws are there for all of us to have a chance at surviving when anyone with a functioning motor system can pilot half a ton of steel around at high speeds. They're not there to inconvenience you specifically.
Now he wants to switch to tons when it's convenient for him. I don't like this guy already.
Yeah, I'm
mixing systems, switching just cavalierly between English and metric.
Final point from Cranky Old Hobo. They're not there to inconvenience you specifically, so your feeling aggrieved at their existence is no excuse to go around breaking them. I think, by and large, I agree. I think Cranky Old Hobo is a little hung up on the speed that it's going, because I mean, like we discussed with the other comment, I think that's variable based off the situation. I don't think it's a one size fits all, and I don't think that every speed limit sign is the best that it could be. You know, I think there are examples on both ends where it's set too high or too low. So it's really conditional. It's a case by case thing. I think they're a little worked up unnecessarily there.
Right. I mean, I think it's an important warning. He just takes a little far. And once again, we come back to what we were talking about earlier, that there's that big part of that enforcement component that will handle a lot of these issues. So, I mean, he's kind of suggesting that you, like, every person will be able to just set the speed limit that they want. We all know that's not the case. That's why we have police. So,
yeah,
it's one of those things, like, you'll be kept in check by the powers that be. So it's a good reminder in the sense that, you know, you should take it. You should take what we're talking about. If you're putting someone else's rights at risk and their safety, then you should take that into consideration. But at the same time, his kind of inference here that you can just set whatever speed limit that you want, that will be the final authority, is not, I don't think, accurate.
Yeah, and that's the part of it that I think is well taken, that it's important to be aware that, you know, these laws aren't put in place to affect me personally. I didn't think that going into it, but it's still a reminder that's well taken of just like, we can't act as if these laws are put in place for us or like specifically targeting us. We're talking about a much more macro scale, which is part of the reason that I asked the question in the first place, because my old philosophy, the philosophy that I started with here, is much too micro, I think. And so I think that this is helping to broaden that out. And so that's well taken. So I replied to Cranky Old Hobo. I said, I find that compelling, especially point A. And yet, I still think that those limits can be misguided in both directions. Set way too high to the point that I'm forced to moderate, or low to the point of ridiculousness. Also, would you apply the same logic to other issues? Your point B is the crux of my own conflict. I take it as a given that laws are necessary for a society to function. So then, regardless of the inconvenience or stupidity I may find, is it incumbent on me to behave as a cog in the machine for the greater good? And this is where I started to like Cranky Old Hobo a lot more, because let's just say that the first comment was very indicative of the name. I was tempted to just not reply, but I did. And this is where it gets interesting. Specifically, Cranky Old Hobo latched onto the idea of whether it is incumbent on me to behave as a cog in the machine for the greater good. It, he, she, whatever, responds, with the example you gave, yes. With other laws, hard maybe. If we're talking about a law which is clearly, in italics, there for public safety, and the only person who benefits from breaking it is you, then I'm afraid I would quite like you to be a cog in the machine so I don't end up smeared across the tarmac. With laws that are questionably, in italics as well, for the greater good, however, it gets trickier. We should be able to rely on the legislature and public pressure to get them changed, but often we can't, through corruption or apathy. In this case, you might have a point, but you'd better be sure of two things. One, that whatever law you're against is definitely not working for the greater good. Two, that you have workable ideas for what to replace it with. Finally, there are laws which are clearly not for the greater good. The Nazis spring to mind, as they so often do. In those cases, feel free to revolt against them in whatever capacity you're capable of. It's all about the context.
That's an important point. You know, it should be a very deliberate process. Civil disobedience is not something that we should take lightly. So, I mean, that's a good point. I think it's fair to say there should be a process, and there should be a lot of thought that goes into it before you start throwing off the imposition of your government.
Yeah, and that's important to me as well. Like, just that it not be flippant, because I think that was a problem in my original philosophy, that I was much too flippant with what I considered to be real or worth my time. And I think it deserves more consideration than that, and a more thoughtful process on exactly what I replace that with. Is it simply me ignoring it, or should I be more active in a solution to what I see as the problem?
Yes, I also don't think it should be mandatory for you to have a perfectly you know, laid out 10-point solution either. I think a lot of times you can point at somebody and say that this is wrong and not necessarily know how it should be replaced, but know that it has to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a requirement. I think it is. I think it definitely strengthens your position, though, if you can say this is wrong, you know, X is wrong, and Y is what we should replace it with. That helps your case, I think, but I don't think it's a requirement to have to have a solution figured out. I think you can point at something, and especially in cases of moral argument, you say this is wrong and this has to stop.
I like that a lot. Oh, and in the plot twist of all plot twists, the guy who said good luck with the podcast was Cranky Old Hobo. I thought it was a different guy.
No kidding.
But after that, I basically said, or not basically, I could just read what I said. I said, you came to exactly the conclusion I was hoping you would. In retrospect, speeding wasn't the best example. I chose it mostly in an effort to avoid more controversial issues. The, quote, other laws you mentioned are where we see eye to eye. I really appreciate the thoroughness of your idea in ensuring a true violation of the greater good and an adequate replacement. And then he replied, cool, good luck with the podcast, mate.
Aw, Craigie Old Hobo's heart grew 3 sizes that day. I love the character development here.
Yeah, we're getting all kinds of arcs. It's wonderful. Let's see what the next one was. I want to make sure that I'm picking. There were a couple that I think there was only one that I didn't even bother to respond to. Oh, no, there were two. one of the ones I didn't respond to was, honestly, I'm surprised this person's name isn't Cranky Old Hobo. The John Reese 20 said, do you know the difference in stopping distance between 30
kilometers
an hour and 50
kilometers
an hour?
What's with the kilometers? I don't know what that means. I have to get a damn converter over here.
Also, I think I still said that time.
You say what I want you to say.
Let's see. XZ... Ooh, this is a hard one to say. Oh, okay, I see what he's doing. It's Exhibit ABC is the username, but it's Exhibit is spelled XZIBIT and then ABC in all caps. Interesting.
Mr. Wordsmith over here. Jeez.
He or she says, I think you already outlined the biggest issue. Not only are you allowing people to ignore the law, you're putting the definition of illogical and minors in the hands of laymen. What's minor here? Societal impact, personal impact, or substantiality of consequences for being caught? Some people would argue that they should be able to do whatever they want, and it's minor as long as it doesn't impact other people. Others might just look at the fine amount and speed. At the fine amount, as in the fines for speeding. There you go. I was confused for a second.
Right.
At the fine amount and speed constantly. What's illogical? Many policy goals for smaller regulations and ordinances are subtle and hard for laymen to understand. Plus, in today's political culture, where people are rightfully super concerned about corporate influence, you're going to have a lot of people read corruption into regulation as a justification for ignoring it.
Well, who is he responding to when he says, I think you already outlined the biggest issue?
Me, because in the original post, I had just said that my own issue with my philosophy is that I'm not comfortable with the majority of people determining what is quote unquote minor or illogical.
Right. That's why it's a good issue for the courts / law enforcement.
And there are some people who actually brought that up that shed some light on it that I wasn't aware of. I think the big thing that I like about this one, and it was said by, I think Cranky Old Hobo had said something similar in one of their comments. Just the idea that sometimes laws that need to be changed won't be, either because of corruption or apathy on the part of the government. And I think that is a relevant critique, that sometimes there will be laws that are unchanged, and this is especially relevant for those of a moral nature. I think less so for those of a less significant nature, but I mean, it's still, the logic I think still applies. But I think that's important to factor in. Like, we can't pretend as though every single law put in place is well-researched and done for the maximum good.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's corruption or apathy, there's a crap ton that the government does that is useless. Sure. and perverted in some way.
Right. I would agree with that. I think, I guess the solution to that then would be to at least try through the normal avenues. And if that doesn't work, then you move to civil disobedience, which I think is in any movement that's worked in history, that's usually been the correct approach that's worked in the long term for those movements. If you look at the American Revolution or the Civil Rights Movement, even slavery, right? You had Wilberforce that argued, you know, in front of Parliament for an inordinate amount of time, trying to working it through the legal method. And of course, at that time too, you had the Underground Railroad, things like that. So the gears were already starting to turn there in terms of disobeying what would have been immoral law, which is slavery being legal, which I think we can all point to now and say that's wrong. So you have two different approaches there. You have one where these slaves are starting to revolt and run away, leave, go north, and then you have Wilberforce on the front in the UK, where he's trying to change it through legal avenues. So I think it kind of reminds me of that. You haven't seen The Patriot. We started watching The Patriot and we didn't finish it, right? That's really good. There's one scene where they're arguing about whether or not they should go to war. This is before all the colonies had announced, or whatever they did, voted a levy, I guess, to raise a militia.
There are alternatives to war. We take our case before the king. We plead with him.
Yes, we've tried that.
Well, then we try again and again, if necessary, to avoid a war.
Benjamin, I was at Bunker Hill. The British advanced three times. And we killed over 700 of them at point blank range, and still they took the ground. That is the measure of their resolve. If your principles dictate independence, then war is the only way. It has come to that.
This is the last possible option. So I think that's the way we should view in cases of bigger civil disobedience, bigger laws that have big moral implications, kind of like Trump here with all the big adjectives. That's the route we should take, is try to work it through legally. And if that doesn't work, then, you know, civil disobedience, but that should be last resort.
Absolutely. And Exhibit ABC actually has a perfect furtherance of what you're saying. I had asked him hypothetically if he would argue that with a firm definition of terms, a mindset like the one I presented could be justified. And he said, I would argue a firm definition of this mindset is impossible. Lawmaking involves a lot of moving parts and conflicting policy goals, so even with a really concrete definition, subjectivity is inevitable. Let me give you an example. If someone challenges the constitutionality of a law, the court applies something called the rational basis test. The test is actually pretty close to what you argued. As long as the law is rationally related to a legitimate government interest, it's upheld. Legitimate usually refers to previous jurisprudence regarding constitutional powers, feasibility of the goal, etc. Those are complicated determinations, even with a deferential standard, reserved for very educated legal minds. Texas doesn't have an income tax. Texas lawmakers have often decried the idea of taxing income, with some even saying it's unconstitutional. That's flagrantly ridiculous as far as all available evidence goes, but it's illustrative here. If you put this power in the hands of the layman, you're at minimum going to have some pretty widespread tax fraud.
That is a good furtherance of the point. Is that rational? I think I've heard of that. Is that a legally admissible standard?
My understanding of it is yes, but I haven't done any backup research on it. I was actually going to ask if you had heard of it, because you have much more experience with things of this nature.
I don't know off the top of my head. I that sounds right. In fact, that probably would have been, let's see, I guess we can just look it up real quick. That sounds like something that would be correct, but the rational basis test, it's a judicial review to determine constitutionality. So yeah, it looks like it is used fairly frequently. So yeah, you have three different ones. You have a rational basis test, intermediate scrutiny test, and strict scrutiny test.
Gotcha. So yeah, I had never heard of the rational, what was it again? I already forgot. The rational basis test. Yeah, I had never heard of that, but I really like that idea. And that's what I told him. I just said, I agree that no firm definition is possible, at least not for humanity. And I agree that the rational basis test is a really cool example. And yeah, I think that idea of just like, is this rationally relevant? It's really cool just in general as a mindset and a philosophy. And I think it helps for the kind of analysis that we're trying to do. But furthermore, I'm glad that that's something that's kind of baked into the way the courts work, because there's still enough problems that I wonder how well this is practiced. But in theory, I feel like it is a response to what often happens, which is this really hyperbolic traditionalism where we do something because that's the way we've always done it. And I appreciate that instead of just saying, well, this is what was decided, so what are we going to do? It actually takes this further level of analysis to dig into it and challenge something. I think that's really good, even if it's not practiced to the fullest of its potential.
I would agree with that. Absolutely.
PGold05. I'm surprised I haven't had to censor any of these so far. I'm very happy with that. Way to go, Reddit. PGold says, if you don't clearly define a criteria for which laws to arbitrarily ignore, then your philosophy is impossible to support unless you can expect everyone to personally ask you if it's okay to ignore a particular law, or otherwise you feel laws should apply to others differently than yourself. Let me see what the rest of, because this is pretty much the same thing we've already talked about.
Right. The thing is, like, the argument is kind of invalid because at the end of the day, it's always up to a person to arbitrarily decide whether that's the government or an individual. So, I mean, it's, if you just want more, the government is just basically more people making that same decision. So, I mean, it's all
exactly, honest. Exactly. At some point, human beings need to decide. After their initial comment, I asked if there was any way to justify the two sides of that, the desire to ignore the arbitrary aspects of the law without compromising the integrity of the entire system. And their response was essentially just no. You have to deal with it regardless. And I don't really think that's true. And I think that the evidence of that is a lot of the conversation that we've already had and what's about to come as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's see. We have two more. The Regen, R-E-G-E-N, says you should not, quote, ignore the law, but every rule should by default have an expiration date. Ignoring what you think is minor opens too wide a door. Laws are not natural nor eternal. They are contextual and as such should always be revisited eventually or by default thrown out. Now, to clarify their point, I asked, are you arguing from the stance of no objective or eternal good? The Regen responded, no, from the stance of we have rules and our society is based on us respecting them. It doesn't mean all rules are good or up to date. Let's update them while making sure the system remains logical. I just thought that's an interesting one. I don't know how much it really adds to our conversation, but it's an interesting perspective. What do you think of that?
That is interesting. I mean, I assume he's not talking about laws of physics or things of that nature. There are absolutely laws that are natural, that would not be a natural law, right? So law of gravity, it would be absolute. It doesn't matter what you think about it.
More governmental laws, I assume.
Although, I mean, even he is right, though. I mean, the law of gravity would change in different contexts if you were in space, for instance, or doing certain flight techniques in aircraft. So there are differences to the applications of those laws, but those laws exist nonetheless. That is interesting. That's an interesting position, honestly. I think he'd go down a rabbit trail with that in terms of he's almost arguing for... So he's saying no laws are moral, right? Is that the argument he's trying to make, is that laws don't inherently have a morality component to them, or am I misunderstanding that?
So it sounds like that's what he's saying. When I asked him point blank, if he was arguing from the perspective of no objective good, he said no, but then what he qualified that with was essentially that philosophy. So basically it's unclear, but I think basically he's just saying that, and the fundamental idea that he seems to be saying, I think I agree with, which is just that if a law is out of date or is unanalyzed, it ought to be. Whether that analysis leads to dismissal or to updating or whatever, it should be.
Right. That's why we have the amendment process. So
exactly.
His point is good, but it's sort of non-unique because we already have those systems in place.
Exactly. And I think that's my biggest thing. I think the only qualification I could give to that point is that while it is non-unique, given that we have the systems in place, I think you can make an argument that those systems tend to be, especially in more minute issues, pretty much ineffective. A lot of the changes that need to happen just don't and probably never will.
Fair enough.
I had asked him after that, if a law is out of date and unreplaced, is it necessary for me to obey it anyway? So when the system fails, essentially, do I need to be obedient? And the post got taken down before he could respond. So we'll never know what the Regen, says. But it's an interesting thought.
That is interesting.
All right, Miss Lindq, MSLINDQU, Miss Lind, I don't know how to say that at all. I'm not even sure if those are words. Says, this is called cheating in life. If you are one of those who is fine with cheaters, then it probably doesn't bother you. If you are one who follows the rules, then this pisses you off, because in many cases, it's about getting ahead, and by following the rules everyone agreed to, you are being penalized, which is the opposite effect the law/rule is supposed to have. Since you seem not to mind stretching the rules, then you probably have benefited to others' detriment. Speeding, you get there sooner. Copying homework, you have more time/good grade. These can be minor, but they can also add up, and of course, there's always flip sides. But just because you get the benefit of cheating doesn't mean you ever suffer the detriment. You may or may not. I'm not claiming to be innocent. I'm simply spelling out why it matters. It matters because you're taking advantage of someone else's good behavior at some level.
I know there's something wrong with this argument, but I can't quite pin it down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I hate that feeling. I don't know that it's – I think cheating is the wrong description maybe. I don't think it's cheating. I don't think by speeding you take advantage of anyone. It's if you get pulled over, then you get pulled over. I mean it's one of those things like we're all going to do what we can to bend things to our advantage, whether or not we want to say we do that or not. We do inherently as human beings. We're going to try to make things work in our favor. That even goes back to our very first episode talking about social – interaction and in friendships, we weigh the advantages and disadvantages at some level, even if we don't want to admit that we do that.
Exactly.
So I don't know that I would call it cheating. I think that, I guess, to take her argument, how would speeding be taking advantage of someone else?
That's, I think, the fundamentally flawed part of it is that I don't think that this argument necessitates taking advantage of someone else. I think that's right. Possible, and that's the other part of it. So it's twofold. It's A, it's not necessarily taking advantage of someone else. I don't think that every example necessitates you stepping over or on top of someone else in order to get the thing that you're after. But B, I don't think that if it does, that's necessarily a negative. It can be, you know, if you have to screw someone over to get what you want, I would say that that's a bad thing. But for example, if I'm going for, like, let's keep it simple and stick to the speeding thing, since that's the through line of all this. If two salesmen are trying to close a sale, and it's basically whoever can get there first, one of them speeds, the other one maintains the law. Yes, technically the other salesman lost because they held to the law. But I don't think that really qualifies as them suffering or being stepped over because of someone's willingness to bend or break the law in this case. It's right. Simply a matter of what we were talking about earlier. The salesman who got there first weighed the good of closing the sale to the bad of breaking the law and said it's worth it and went for it, and it paid off. And I don't think just because someone loses as a result of that doesn't make it incumbent on you to play by the same rules. I think, honestly, a lot of the people that are extremely successful in life are those who are willing to bend and break the rules, because that's how you succeed. You know, if you play by the same rules as everyone else, you will have the same level of success as everyone else, which is to say you'll be average and unremarkable.
And I think when you're saying that, you're not talking about like moral rules about, correct. You know, you still want to maintain character, but you, at the same time, you want to use whatever tools you can that are at your disposal. By the same token, that's, let's say the guy Sven got there 2 minutes before the other salesman. The salesman knew a shortcut to the building where the client was, and he took that shortcut and beat the other guy there. I mean, would you consider that cheating because the other salesman didn't know the same route that he did? Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. You can debate it all day, but at the end of the day, it's just one of those things. Like, you use whatever tools that you can that are at your disposal, and I don't think that necessitates cheating by her definition of the word. I think cheating involves some sort of deception. You know, normally when you think about it, even like in our classes, you can pay a small amount, or not really a small amount for me, but it's like 15 bucks, I think, a month. You can sign up for Chegg or whatever and have free tutors. And you can use that and get them to help you do your homework, stuff like that. And so that would be an example of using a tool to help you get better at school. Is that cheating? No. Would sneaking in the professor's office without telling him and getting the answer key and copying that down be cheating? Yes, absolutely. I think to cheat, that involves some sort of deception and some sort of malicious intent. So I think that's kind of where it breaks down, for me, anyway.
I don't know if, like, the tutoring is a perfect one-to-one only because, like, the tutoring is legal, right? So in the realm of laws and rules, that's allowed. However, the idea of breaking in and copying down answers, I think that's more in the realm of what's being talked about here. I think it with something like that, it's just important to take it in the context of everything else that we've talked about in weighing what you're doing and weighing it against the greater morality. So in the case of trying to get answers to a test, whether that's copying homework, breaking into a professor's office, whatever, at that point, you're compromising the moral good that you're trying to achieve. You've compromised the goal of getting an education with the goal of get a good grade. And as a result, you're perpetrating degradable acts, essentially.
Degradable, British English, of waste products, packaging materials, etc., capable of being decomposed chemically or biologically. See also biodegradable. Collins English Dictionary.
Interestingly enough, also a counterpoint to this person is that if you copy someone's homework or you steal answers, you're not stepping over anyone. You're not directly hurting anyone. So I don't like that part of the argument. I just think doesn't really hold up. Even though I would say you shouldn't cheat off someone's test or whatever, no one's getting hurt in that. I think that holds up some of the time on a case by case basis. But if that was your only barometer for what rules you should follow and what rules you shouldn't, you would end up in a morally compromising situation, I think.
That's so hard. There's so many factors, because you could say cheating off someone's maybe multiple choice test wouldn't hurt, but by the same token, you couldn't do something like take someone's essay before they turn it in, then turn it in as your own before they did. That would be an example of hurting someone else by exercising your own quote unquote rights. So it's hard to distinguish between those two. You almost have to take it on a case by case.
Yeah, I very much agree, and I think that's a lot of this is. There's not a one-size-fits-all. You have to take it case by case.
Right.
Let's see. There was one more. Okay, this was one that I really liked, as I recall. And this is the last one that we'll go over. There are some on here for the listeners at home that I'm not reading out, just the ones that I hadn't replied to. I'm trying to highlight the best of them. There is still some really good stuff in the thread. So if you want to see more about what people were saying, definitely check it out. We would definitely love to hear from anyone at home who has thoughts on this topic as well. This comes from Svensson_26. He or she says, I don't fully agree. While it's probably not that big a deal to ignore some rules/laws/authority, you shouldn't brazenly do so unless you have a good moral reason to. For example, you shouldn't speed unless the traffic is also speeding. Then it would be less safe and thus immoral to drive slower than everyone else. You also might have a moral reason to speed. As long as you aren't taking on too much risk by driving recklessly, it would be a greater breaking of morals to miss your daughter's piano recital. A few
kilometers
an hour over the limit is probably okay. Fire trucks can speed as fast as they want because it would be less morally acceptable to let people die in a fire. In the end, it comes down to a weighing of morals. Can you break small laws if you have a greater moral obligation? Yes. But then again, can you break big laws if you have a greater moral obligation? Also, yes.
I like that. It's also, you have to be careful because you can kind of get into some danger there in terms of like starting to make your cause maybe more significant than it is, or just because it's important to you, therefore it's more important than someone else's. So you have to make sure you're being actually objective in terms of your cause. I think it's a very interesting point. At the beginning there, they're kind of arguing for that whole law I was talking about in Texas, that driving dangerous given the conditions, which I think is good. The point about missing your daughter's piano recital, I don't know if that would be immoral to miss. I think that would be not ideal, but I don't know about comparing that to letting people die in a fire. Probably not quite the same, but I get the point that they're going for there. That is very interesting. I think that's a good distinction to have.
I appreciate the inclusion of the piano recital example because I think it shows a level of low good, and good might be a better word than morality, because it's not morally good or bad to be at your daughter's piano recital, but it is definitely good to be there. So at that point, so like if you have the good of making it to a piano recital and you have the good of saving a life, right, then those two different things will greatly differ your reaction when it comes to your safety on the road. If the good that I'm trying to achieve is making it to my daughter's piano recital, then the amount of danger I put myself and others in will be honestly, very little to none. Actually, none. Because no life and no injury to another person is worth that the benefit of making it to the piano recital. That being said, if, you know, the road is open, it is clear, and I can safely exceed the speed limit, then the good of making it to the recital is superior to the bad, in quotes, of pushing the speed limit. Now, on the opposite side of the spectrum, having something more extreme like saving a life, at that point, it is justified to go really fast in what is a much larger vehicle than anything else, and even get to the point of forcing other people off the road or to pull over in order to facilitate your travel. And that's because of the life or lives often that can be saved by that act. The moral balance then is in favor of the speeding and more dangerous driving.
Yes, I do agree. I think you just have to be very careful because I think that could easily turn into an ends justify the means type argument.
Yeah, no, that's
not,
true. That's
which
true.
Is not what we're saying. This is an individual weighing of right, not, okay, you know, I can kill 100 people because in the process I'll save, you know, this X many people. So you didn't, this person would probably like 24 a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds like that's kind of a lot of those issues that show wrestles with whether or not, you know, torturing this person is worth saving 100,000 American lives, et cetera, that type of thing, which are very, very interesting, compelling moral arguments. I think that we deal with even to an extent today in different ways. I mean, not so much in the early 2000s, Iraq, Bush era, but we do still wrestle with them, I think.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I honestly don't think it's cut and dry. I definitely have what I think is true and ideal in a moral society, but I don't know fully how I reconcile that with the practicalities of living in the world. It's not always that simple. You can't always be in the clear. So at the point where you have to bend somewhere, where do you bend? You know, and I think that's where we get into the haziness of topics like this. And the difficulties that I don't think humanity will ever have a real answer to.
Right. And that's why it's fun to talk about them to an extent, because I think it's one of those that there's not really a truly 100% defensible position on it.
Yeah, exactly. So after all of that, has your perspective and kind of idea that we started with on power changed at all?
Yeah, I think it has. I think this kind of helped me crystallize some of the things that I was thinking about a little bit better. So I don't know that I'm still 100% sold in a position, but I think it kind of helped me have some things to think about more so than I did before. So instead of like abstract ideas, these were some good examples. They were some good applications, and it kind of gave me some food for thought.
Excellent. Yeah, I came away with a lot of the same stuff. It very much crystallized for me what I thought, and it's not so much a complete reversal or change of my initial opinion. There were two major takeaways that I took. One was the intentionality behind what I'm doing. So if I'm gonna push back against something, or if I'm going to take that a step further and actually violate a rule or a law, then I need to have a justification for that. I need to make sure that I am 100% sure and clear and not be flippant in what I choose to obey or ignore. And then B, that weighing of morals I found to be a really helpful way to think about it in measuring what I'm trying to achieve. Because I really don't think if I'm driving home from work and there's no timeline, there's nothing pressing for me to get there or to wherever I'm going, then I don't think there's any justification whatsoever to speed. It's not necessary. There's nothing to weigh. So obey the law. It doesn't hurt, right? And I don't think you should break the law just for the sake of breaking it or sticking it to the man. That level of intentionality and purposefulness really, I think, grounded my philosophy. And I'm sure it'll continue to evolve, but it's really helped a lot.
Yes, I would agree. Thank goodness for old Reddit.
How can one be well when one suffers morally?
What did you get for ticks, my friend?
Gotcha. Lucky 7.
So I honestly did not keep like any track of your ticks. I got way too
like
into
one
it.
Of us forgets.
I know. I like noticed about 3. I'm sure there were more, but I didn't.
There
were
probably about 4 or 5.
A crappy job. So you win.
Yay.
I bow before you in victory.
What do I win?
No one's told us, so we don't know.
I'm getting less and less motivated to do this every week.
This is our now monthly request to please tell us what we win.
Give us some gift cards.
When someone finally does participate and tell us what they think we should win, it's going to be a heck of a day. Like, I don't even know.
The loser has to shave their head or something ridiculous.
Jeez.
That might be a little more than we're willing to commit for a monthly podcast.
Yeah, you know. Maybe when it's a weekly podcast.
May get your wish after all.
Is there anything you wanted to mention in the wrap-up?
Go follow me at Real James King on Instagram, on Snapchat. That's about it.
There you go. You can check out all the various things that I'm involved in at commoncandor.com/QIree. Easy way to see all the projects I'm doing and check out all my social media. Definitely go check out the Thor Ragnarok episode of Franchise Fatigue. That it should be out by now. Link is in the show notes. Tune in next month to hear whatever fabulous topic James has in store for us.
Or maybe he won't bring anything and it will be a special end of year episode. They don't know. You don't know. Tune in and find out.
And until then, good night, Ellen.
This concludes our broadcast day. Good night and God bless America.